This is Brent Musburger, and here is your VSiN Action Update. Now, here are the latest lines from my guys in the desert.
The NFL Draft is coming up a week from Thursday in Cleveland, Ohio, on My Guys of the Desert with Matt Eumanns and Vinny Maiulo. Point Spread Weekly contributor Will Hill discussed one of his favorite prop bets for the NFL Draft.
Under 1.5 for the running backs taken. Again, I don't see the updated market on that, but that's one I really like. I just think direction of the league, it's a passing league. You know, it's about quarterbacks, receivers, pass rushers, guys that can cover the receivers. Last year, Allaire was the only running back taken in the first round, and he was the last pick of the first round. And I think if you gave the Chiefs truth serum, they might regret that pick. That was kind of a luxury pick. That was, you know, look how good we are. We can shop at the toy department kind of pick, where, you know, they could have used help on the offensive line or another defensive player. Yep. And you look at the guys recently going the first round, Fournette. I mean, he wasn't even on the team a few years later. Zeke. I mean, that's the other thing. You pick these guys that high, you got to pay them with that second contract. For running backs, it's not really worth it. And you can find, look, Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, Kamara. These are guys that went second, third round. So I just think directionally under 1.5 running backs is a good bet if you can find it.
Point Spread Weekly contributor Will Hill on My Guys of the Desert with Matt Eumanns and Vinny Maiulo. Under 1.5 running backs selected in the opening round of the draft a week from Thursday in Cleveland, Ohio. Plenty of speculation on who will go number 3 in the draft to the San Francisco 49ers. It appears likely they'll draft a quarterback. But which quarterback? It's a prop bet that Warren Sharp of Sharp Football Analysis told Gil Alexander on A Numbers Game that he will avoid.
I think what's clear to me is a lot of people who are talking publicly on Twitter, etc., who are analyzing betting lines for the first time, it's pretty evident who these people are because they're massively overreacting to the line moves, which are based entirely on news and or workouts, and overhyping one thing or another. It'll be fascinating to see the line movement that occurs once we see Trey Lance's pro day with the number 3 overall pick. But it is pretty wild discussing that number 3 pick and the line moves that have been back and forth. But in general, I have taken the position with that number 3 pick since it's probably, I would imagine, Gil, if you talk to bookmakers, like, that is going to be the most bet of any of their draft props, like who goes number 3 or the over-under of the quarterbacks that are projected to go at that third position. And my opinion is, let the bookmakers worry about screwing around with the numbers and adjusting those and everything. There's more value to be found elsewhere on the betting board for the draft, and that's where I've tended to attack. So I'm probably not betting anything as it relates to that number 3 pick.
Warren Sharp, a Sharp Football Analysis on A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern on VSiN. Justin Fields of Ohio State, minus 140 to go third. Mac Jones, plus 110. Trey Lance, 4-1. Zurich Classic of New Orleans at the TPC Louisiana. The defending champions back in 2019. John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, the favorites at 6-1. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, plus 650. Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman, 12-1. Football season never ends, and the VSiN betting experts are getting ready for the betting opportunities of the NFL Draft. We'll have full coverage at vsin.com, daily best bets email updates, 24/7 video access, plus we'll be live all night during round one with Brent Musburger, Michael Lombardi, Gil Alexander, Mike Pritchard, and our entire VSiN football team. Learn more and start your free trial today at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. With your action update, I'm Mike Senna.
Get the latest VSiN odds at VSIN.com. And remember, cashing tickets is what it's all about.
The spring sports calendar is packed with betting opportunities, and here at VSiN, we're on top of all the action. We're looking at early season baseball trends, what teams are peaking and tanking, heading into the NBA and NHL playoffs, tracking the favorites and long shots for every golf tournament, plus keeping an eye on all of the top NFL draft prospects to provide you the best betting insights and analysis. Start your free trial today at VSiN.com/subscribe and put our team to work for you.
Before you place your next bet, visit vsin.com for all the latest data and powerful betting tools. Start with our live odds, team comparisons, and previews for every game on the schedule. Then dive deeper with live tracking of betting trends and line movements. And don't miss our unique tools, including odds comparisons from sportsbooks across the country, prop bet search engine, and custom parlay calculator. Everything you need to increase your betting knowledge and confidence is at your fingertips. Visit vsin.com today.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line, hour number two here on VSiN and VSiN.com, the sports betting network. I'm Brady Cannon along with Michael Lombardi, talking a lot of NFL draft as we are just 8 days away. And the prop betting markets are aplenty, Mr. Lombardi. And let's take a look at what team will draft a position first. Are they going to draft a quarterback first, an offensive lineman? Of course, there are odds set with this. The odds makers have become very creative. And, you know, they're having to do this. And competition always breeds, you know, good product. And that's what we're seeing here with sportsbooks as the draft becomes more and more popular. More and more types of offerings here. And so let's take a look at the Denver Broncos. The first position that they will draft, and a quarterback is a pretty good size favorite at minus 130. Now, then you go down to offensive lineman at 5-1, cornerback at plus 550, linebacker at plus 550, and then everything after that is a pretty good size long shot. Would you lay the minus 130 on a quarterback? Is that the way they're going pretty much for sure?
Well, I mean, look, you have to think that, right? I mean, they have a team that can compete with anyone. I mean, what they've done in the offseason, you feel like they've got the opportunity to make some hay. I mean, if there was a dominating defensive lineman, you know, we're making this conversation predicated on the fact that we think that Von Miller is going to be the Von Miller of old, right? I'm not sure that's the case, but needless to say, you know, even if he's 30, if he plays 30 plays a game, he can still make an impact. Plus, they're playing at home, I think, which we really haven't talked about, Brady, that home field advantage that they didn't have last year, which hurt them. They'll come back this year. You know, they get Kyle Fuller as a corner. They signed Ronald Darby, so I don't think corner is going to be in play as much. They still have other players there. I think it's defensive line. I think they could certainly use a linebacker, but I think it's also offensive line. Look, they drafted Risner in the second round. They drafted, they signed Graham Glasgow from Detroit. You know, they've got Kuzenberry. They drafted in the third round. So they're pretty solid. Now they get Juwan James back. So if James comes back, who do they draft? Do they draft a tackle? You never want to be tackle poor, but that doesn't really fit. The position that fits the most for this team is quarterback. It's quarterback. You know, and from 1 to 3, from Locke, Rippon to Driscoll, they don't have a quarterback, in my mind.
Yeah, I hear you. And I just thought, and I was talking to JJ over the break there, I think if you're going to be betting this draft, I think you kind of have to bet on chaos and go contrarian because – you know, obviously, I think we know Lawrence is going number one, Wilton probably going number two, but I think there's some scenarios where you have to kind of take a chance on, you know, somebody upsetting the apple cart here. And let's say the Denver Broncos are scrambling to try and make a deal to try and get this quarterback or what have you, and it doesn't work. I kind of like offensive linemen at 5-1.
I think there's a good play there. And I think that you have to believe when push comes to shove, they'll trade for Teddy Bridgewater or someone like that.
Right.
I mean, I think they see it as if they can't, you know, even if they draft Trey Lance, shouldn't they trade for a quarterback? Now, you know, Elway still believes Locke can be the player. We'll see if that's true or not. Who knows? But they're riding a lot on that pick. I think to me, when you break this team down, the only hole is, yeah, they could use another inside defensive tackle. There's no doubt about that. You know, they signed Shamar Stephen from Minnesota. He's a guy in there. They still have Dremont Jones in there, you know, and so they could certainly use that. They have Shelby Harris. Where are they going there? But I think really when you just look at plug and play only, you know, with Judy, Sutland, Hamler, Patrick, I mean, they're good at receiver. They got tight ends. They're good at tight end. I mean, for me, it's really about the quarterback, and they got to get somebody that can come in and meet the team. What you don't want to be is a quarterback's too young and the team's kind of ready to go. Then he holds the team back. So you got to find somebody that can get the team to where they need to go. It's a little bit what Alex Smith did for Kansas City. It's what he did when he was in San Francisco. I think that's what they need. Could that be Teddy Bridgewater? Well, we know this. George Payton, the general manager of the Broncos, was with Teddy Bridgewater when he was in Minnesota. So we know they know the player. So was Pat Shurmur. They all like the player. So there's a lot of familiarity to what they want to do.
Yeah, I think if all the dominoes fall in place properly for the Broncos, they probably do draft a quarterback. But again, you know, there's a lot of chaos involved in this first round, especially. Let's move to the Dallas Cowboys, the first position drafted for the guys with stars on their helmets. Cornerback is the favorite at plus 105, offensive lineman at 3-1, defensive lineman at plus 325, and then a linebacker at 8-1. And Michael, I can make a case that they need players at all four of those positions.
I think that's got it dead right there. You know, they don't have a right tackle. I mean, Collins comes back. I'm sorry. They do have a right tackle. Tyron Smith, the left tackle, whether he can continue to play or not with his back injury is concerning. The center position they drafted last year in the fourth round in Valdez. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. But they need the offensive lineman, especially if they want to move Collins to left tackle and get a right tackle in there. Now, they signed Ty Nischke from Buffalo, who's always been a swing tackle. So that makes you think that they're not going to do that. Cornerback is where they spent most of their offseason. And from my sources, that's where they're going to go if they can. Now, we also heard that Jerry's in love with Kyle Pitts at tight end. You know, they have Blake Jarwin. They have Dalton Schultz at tight end. Would they go for that? He would make their offense even more explosive if they can protect and if they can stop anybody on defense, which for me, once again, is a concern, partly because of, you know, I'm not sold on this Pete Carroll cover one coverage, one front scheme.
Let's go to the New England Patriots, and I think this is very interesting here and a very difficult one to bet. The first position that the New England Patriots will draft is a quarterback at the favorite at plus 180, a linebacker at plus 275, a wide receiver at plus 350, or a cornerback at 5-1. And I think you can make a case that the Patriots desperately need all four of those positions.
No doubt. And I think that when you look at the cornerback, you know, J.C. Jackson signed his tender. Now, what does that mean? So when you have a player who's a restricted free agent, you offer him a contract based on where he was drafted or wasn't drafted. So you can raise the player from a free agent to a first rounder or a second rounder. They put J.C. as a second round pick. He signed that tender. Now, what does that mean? That means they can trade him. On draft day, they could use him as an asset if they want to trade up to get somebody. You could say to a team, you know, we'll trade you J.C. Jackson on a one-year tender, plus our pick, we'll flip it in here. All right? Where do they go? I think receivers in play. Do I think another corner's in play? If they liked one, I doubt if they do. You know, offensive line, to me, would be if they're sitting at 15 and they have nowhere else to go, he'll take the best offensive or defensive lineman, figuring that the value's too good, you can't pass it up. He won't force a quarterback unless it's the right player.
Right. I think that makes sense. Michael, what about linebacker? They really lost a lot in free agency and trades, and they had players opt out last year. You know, they were kind of cleaned out at the linebacker position in 2020. Would they draft a linebacker that high?
Well, I mean, it depends on who the guy was. But look, here's what they've done. They signed Van Noy back. Hightower comes back. They're older players, right? Judon's essentially an outside linebacker. They needed to set the edge. They still have Chase Winovich that he can do that. Hightower will play inside. You know, they'll need more speed at linebacker. That's what I think they need more than anything is speed at linebacker. But for the most part, I think they could. But when you look at this team, where could they plug a player in? I think they need a three technique more than anything. Now, they signed Lawrence Guy back. They got Dietrich Wise back, you know, and they signed this kid, Montarius Adams, out of Auburn. He was hurt last year with the Green Bay Packers. They could put him in a three technique. You know, they've got two defensive tackles in Godworth and Gotchow in terms of noses. So they're good there. I think they got some power in there that they haven't had before. They signed Bauer. In 19, and of course, Judon. So for me, I think the one position that you could say without a doubt is quarterback and wide receiver could really improve their team.
Yeah, I was with you on that one. I was just going to ask you if quarterback deserves to be the favorite receiver. We know that that was a shortcoming for the Patriots. Really kind of has been the last couple of seasons. Of course, Edelman retires. And what about N'Keal Harry? I really liked that draft pick when they did that a couple seasons ago.
Me too.
Has he kind of been, you know, I hate to use the word bust. Is he just still developing? Do you think he's going to, be the player they expected him to be?
You know, he just hasn't been able to take that next step. He's very inconsistent. He hasn't showed the burst or the acceleration that we saw. Or, you know what bothers me more when I watched him at Arizona State, Brady? I thought he played the game with a lot of power and got the ball in his hands. He was going to be hard to tackle. You know, I thought he was going to be really hard to tackle, and he hasn't been that way. And, you know, their offense, their passing game wasn't very good last year, and their skill and their explosiveness wasn't very good. But to me, I think if they take a wide receiver, this receiver will have four down ability. It'll be somebody that they feel like can impact the return game, can impact the return game to where he can make a difference. That's where the losing Edelman really hurts, because even though they have Gunnar Olszewski that did it last year and did it very well for them, they still always like to have a receiver that can do it in case they need a play in a game where they say, you know what, we're going to put this guy back there, he'll make a play. And I think that's something that they could certainly look at. At 15, I think the value on the board at 15 is going to be a receiver.
Yep, I think it makes a lot of sense. The New York Giants, their first position that they will draft, a wide receiver, and this makes sense too, is the favorite at plus 240, an offensive lineman at plus 275, linebacker plus 350, D-line. I mean, it's kind of all over the board here, pretty short shots, yeah, Michael. Which way do the Giants go, do you think?
Well, I mean, look, when your team is posted for 7 wins as the win total, you got to have a lot of needs, right? I mean, Think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, Matt Pertz, their right tackle. I mean, Kenny Wiggins, Matt Pert, none of those names. I mean, Zach Fulton, who played last year at Houston and was cut this year as a cap casualty, he did not play very well. He's their starting right guard. Their right side of their offensive line is not going to allow Daniel Jones to ever develop into what he thinks he could do. Now, they got Barkley back off healthy. They signed Booker. So I don't think they'll need a running back as much as anything. I mean, that's why it's 66-1. But at the receiver core, they signed John Ross, the former number one pick out of the University of Washington. Remember the kid that ran the great 40 time?
Oh, fast, I love that kid in college, man.
But never could play, right? They still have Golladay, they have Slayton, and they still have Sterling Shepard. So they have three receivers, not counting Ross, that are probably going to be on the field quite a bit. Slayton has played pretty well for them as a fifth-round pick in 19. Offensive line, to me, is the winner. I think that's where I'm going to bet, 275. I think that's where the value is going to be on the board for them. It'll be a size-speed offensive lineman. If Slater makes it to them at 11, I can't imagine they wouldn't take him.
I think that's a great call, because I forgot about Kenny Golladay. I mean, that kind of shores up the receiver need right there. Are you really going to go, you know, I mean, do you want to add another? I mean, Golladay, he's certainly the number one at this point. If they draft a guy at 11, that guy is certainly a pretty close to a one receiver there. I think it makes sense to go down the board a little bit and go offensive line with the New York Giants.
I mean, they can't function as an offense with the right side of their line the way it is. I mean, I think that's where fans have to really pay attention to. If they had to play a game tomorrow, if the Giants had to play, this is a big Al Davis thing. He used to talk about this all the time, Brady. If we had to play a game tomorrow, we couldn't play because we don't have. So we would sign somebody that maybe wasn't very good, but at least allowed us, in his mind, if we had to go play a game, we could go play. Now, I don't think you could say that about Matt Pert, a third-round pick in 20 last year. I never saw him really play, so I don't know that. I know Zach Fulton will be a liability at right guard. He was last year for the Houston Texans. Maybe he could improve, right? So the right side of their line, they might be able to go play, but how effective would they be? To me, that's the question mark that you have to answer. And, you know, no one really knows that answer, not with, at least without an offseason.
All right, the Philadelphia Eagles. I think this one is interesting because I think it's more bettable. It's less of a guess, in my opinion. You've got wide receiver as the favorite at plus 180. Cornerback just slightly higher than that at plus 190. And then offensive lineman at plus 450. And then it gets a little deeper after that.
Well, I mean, look, they moved away from the offensive lineman. You know, they moved out of six. I think everybody thinks it's a receiver. You know, will they take one? You know, the quarterback 16-1. I think they want to give Hurts a chance to develop. I think they're more interested in the quarterbacks in 2022 than they are the quarterbacks in 2021. And offensive line, to me, I think is a huge need for them. I would have stayed at six and see if Sewell would have made it to me. However, they moved out because they felt like, you know, they have Lane Johnson coming back who they feel can be healthy again. Well, the receipt remains to be seen. I don't know. They have Dillard coming back at left tackle. They've got to play him. They drafted him in the first round in 19. They have Mulata, who they played off and on at right and left tackle that they like. So they've got, they feel like they have three legitimate tackles on their team. Would they take a tackle? So that's why I think they moved out of six, because they weren't going to take Sewell. They couldn't use him. I don't think the logic is good. Defensive line is really where I think it begins. And, you know, and I think that's where they have to focus. Now, their offensive line interior is awfully old, right? So Kelsey's over 30. Brandon Brooks is coming off of 2 years of injuries. So I think if they could get the right guard, whether it's the kid from USC, I think they could take him, or they could take a defensive lineman that they felt was a rusher that could get to the quarterback, because they are old there. Brandon Graham is an older player, and Derek Barnett hasn't played to the level that they hope he would play to.
Yeah, no, I sound like a broken record encouraging people to go after offensive line, but, you know, I've really learned it from hearing you on the program here. The Eagles are definitely getting old and often injured across that offensive line. Lane Johnson, it seemed like he was questionable every single week of the season. We saw Carson Wentz, the punishment that he took at quarterback last year. I'm with you. I would go a little deeper here, and it's interesting what you bring up about defensive linemen. That's at 9-1. That's a nice price if they go that direction, the Philadelphia Eagles. Receiver, I mean, it's interesting what you brought up about the move. Moving out of the sixth position kind of seems to talk to the fact that they're going to go receiver. But again, I don't know if that is the biggest need on the board for the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll see if we can make it make sense in the next segment, Michael. It's time to talk a little golf. You ready, my friend?
I'm ready to go. Let's do it.
All right. We're going to talk some golf. Also, I've got a baseball play and an NBA play as we try and make it make sense right here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And it makes sense here on the Lombardi Line on a Wednesday. Brady Cannon and Michael Lombardi with you. See if we can make some dollars. And Michael, I want to go to the PGA Tour, as we like to do during this segment. It's the Zurich Classic, and it's a tough...
Explain. I don't think everybody understands what's actually happening down in Louisiana. Where is it? Is it in New Orleans?
Right outside in Avondale. I guess it's about 15 minutes away from the French Quarter there in Bourbon Street.
Okay.
So basically the same darn thing. But it's you know, it's a little fly in the ointment that the PGA Tour has thrown into the mix here. They did it a few weeks back with the WGC Match Play, kind of golf's version of March Madness with the brackets and whatnot. Now we've got a team event, and it's just not your normal singular player stroke play event. These guys team up. You've got John Rahm and Ryan Palmer, the defending champions. You've got Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. So for the first, let's see, you've got 4 days, obviously. Thursday and Saturday, they will play best ball, which is both players play their own golf ball, and just whoever has the lower score on the hole, that becomes your team score. If Rahm makes a four and Schauffele makes a three or whatever, you know, your team scores a three. And then on Friday and Sunday, they play alternate shots. So Michael Lombardi, you hit your tee ball, Brady Cannon hits the approach shot, and you just go back and forth and alternate. And then whatever score, of course, you make on the hole, that's your team score. So it's a very difficult handicap, because you're not just trying to break down one player's skill sets, but now you have to factor in a second player and the whole team dynamic. So for me, it's a lot more fun to watch. I do have a couple of bets on it that I feel good about, and I certainly, you know, took it seriously handicapping it and trying to figure it out. But it's tough because, you know, I equated it to a football game, Michael. You can handicap the Steelers versus the Patriots, but what if it's the Patriots and the Buccaneers against the Steelers and the Rams?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, how are you going
to
do that?
Sometimes what happens if the officials start to make more calls than you really care to have them make? Yeah. Sometimes you're fighting them, too.
So I went
Who do you like? So tell me, who do you like?
I my theory here, Michael, is there's a couple of teams like the favorites there, Schauffele and Cantlay and Rahm and Palmer. Those guys are pretty much good at everything. Now, the other teams, as you get a little bit further down the odds board, one guy might be good off the tee, one guy's a good putter, one guy has a good short game, one guy's good with his irons. I kind of went after teams that were more complementary. you know it, Michael, when you've played in the, you know, the local country club scramble, you know, or whatever, and they say, guys, ham and egg it, right? One guy's good at one thing. One guy has a blow-up hole. The other guy makes a birdie. And back and forth. So I kind of like the ham and egg theory here. And now Bubba Watson and Scottie Scheffler was one of the teams I took. They're both really good off the tee. But Scheffler's a great scrambler. Bubba's really good on strokes gained approach. And they both make a lot of birdies. The next team, Max Homa and Taylor Gooch, they're good buddies. The camaraderie's there. The level of comfort is there. And they're pretty much good at everything across the board. Now, as I get a little deeper, Jason Kokrak and Pat Perez, they know each other because they share the same sponsorship by BetMGM out here in Las Vegas. Of course, our show sponsor as well, BetMGM. So Jason Kokrak, that would be the Team Lombardi line team right there.
There you go.
Kokrak,
I like it.
Kokrak, a really good long player, great off the tee and good with the irons. And then Perez really kind of supports him with the short game. He's the better short game player. Joel Damon and Lanto Griffin. Griffin is really long off the tee. Damon is very accurate off the tee. And so it's kind of a come see, come saw with some of my longer shots there. And I think that builds for a powerful team when you complement one another.
Right. I mean, I like your logic, and I think you got to play that. I looked at Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson. That was the one, 3,100 to one. Wasn't it? I think they're plus 3,100.
Yeah,
I believe
it's 30
number.
Or 35.
Same
to
as
one, sure.
Same as Homa and Gooch, I think. Same. Well, they're 32, right? So I just looked at them because I thought that, you know, Stenson can be so amazingly consistent with what he does, how he plays. And Rose, I know he didn't really play well. The longer the tournament went at the Masters, I thought his back started to act up and it was harder on him. But maybe in this format, he won't have to hit every shot and the pressure won't be on his back as much. So that's why I thought those two guys might be worth a play.
Well, you know, my partner Wes Reynolds is on that pairing as well of Henrik Stenson and Justin Rose, and kind of some of the points you make as well. I think they complement each other, certainly. They're also really good friends. They used to live down the street from one another in Florida. They also competed down the stretch in Rio, where Justin Rose won the gold medal and Henrik Stenson took the silver. They also have a 6-2 record when they have teamed up in the Ryder Cup together. So yeah, they absolutely have some history at being pretty good at this team thing. The other players, we'll see if we can make it make sense with the Nationals over the Cardinals. I'm laying the money line here at minus 165 with the Washington Nationals over St. Louis. And then the Timberwolves and the Kings, I'm going over the total again, Michael. They only put up 254 on Tuesday night. We'll come back and talk with Steve Mackinnon next right here on the Lombardi Line. The spring sports betting action, you need the VSiN experts to stay ahead of the game. The best place to start is at VSiN.com, where we're covering baseball, the NHL and NBA playoff races, the NFL draft, and every game on the schedule to give you a betting edge. And while you're there, get all the latest Vegas odds, check out our bet tracker and parlay calculator tools, read in-depth articles from our team, including betting strategies from basic to advanced theory, and you can also listen to our VSiN shows 24/7 for free. Start your daily betting at VSiN.com, and while you're there, check out our subscription options starting as low as $22 per month. Brady Cannon and Michael Lombardi with you on the Lombardi Line, and a couple of baseball games to update here. The Philadelphia Phillies just put a 3 spot on the board with a 3-run homer. They now lead the San Francisco Giants, bottom of the second inning in Philadelphia, facing Antonio DeScalfani. The Phillies out to a 3-0 early lead. No score between the Marlins and the Orioles. Top of the second inning, 2 out with 1 on for the visiting Baltimore Orioles. Time now to talk with our man, Steve Mackinnon. He is the editor of Point Spread Weekly, VSiN's online digital publication that came out in your inbox overnight, I believe, an early release for Point Spread Weekly this week, Steve. And you have expanded upon what you wrote about last week as far as the NFL, and now we have season win totals out in the betting market, so this makes this even more interesting. And your general theory is kind of what goes up must come down, and I notice you point towards turnover differential as one of the points you make that is a big indicator of how a team might do in the following season.
Yeah, absolutely, Brady. Turnovers, well, some can be considered luck. Some are a matter of talent, I think. But turnover luck doesn't tend to run similarly year to year. So if you have pretty bad luck in one season, it's a good bet that will improve next season. And as a result, the team tends to improve.
So, like, for example, we saw Miami create a ton of turnovers last year, right, Steve? And
absolutely.
Can they have 2 years ago, remember when the Bears with Mitchell Trubisky at quarterback, and their defense was creating turnover after turnover. But then the next year, the well went dry. Vic Fangio went to Denver, and all of a sudden, Chuck Pagano, they couldn't create one. Are you saying that that fits the Miami Dolphins for this year?
It could. I would think they're probably one of the first teams you're going to look at and think, boy, they got the benefit of a lot of breaks last year. So probably fit into some systems. You'll see them drop a little bit. One of the interesting things we talk about Miami, one of the findings that I had, and Jacksonville makes our cover this week in the Points Spread Weekly, negative turnover differential with a minus 10 point per game point differential. That's pretty bad team right there. This is a sort of a rise from the ashes system. Teams like that tend to improve by about four games on the season. That's why Jacksonville qualifies for that, and that's why they're undercover this week.
Hey, Steve, what about teams that you talk about, teams that won like double-digit amount of games, specifically 10 games or more, and you say traditionally they have a decline in the following season or a good team to bet under their season win total? I'm wondering, in your studies, are you finding that this is just kind of a natural, organic phenomenon here, or is it also because, you know, going into the next season, bettors and odds makers, they're going to tend to inflate that win total number a little bit, built upon expectation, and you know, when reality might be, hey, they're not going to necessarily get there again. Which is a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both, Brady. I would say a huge believer in the fact that the NFL is a lot about momentum. So teams maybe get to 10 wins, two or three of them, that might be because they got a different confidence level than the year before, that type of thing. All of a sudden you lose some games early in the season and you don't have that anymore, and that tends to lead to teams declining from one season to the next.
Look, I think it's really important for the listener to really get their hands on this week, Point Spread Weekly, because I think if you want to play the over-unders, there's so much information in this great guide that Steve puts together that's really remarkable. And one thing that caught my eye, because I've been anti the New York Football Giants, they're at 7 wins, and I don't think they can duplicate it. But the best way to really support your position is to find the negative of your position, to find the opposite, right? And so as I'm going through the Point Spread Weekly this week, and I see since 2000, there have been 60 teams that have somehow won 6 or fewer games despite allowing 23 points or less in that season. In the follow-up season, 43 of those teams, or 71.7% of those teams, improved in the win column, and that improvement was at least 3.76 wins per year. The only team that fits that criteria are the New York Football Giants. So now, with that data, am I right about betting the under for the Giants? Am I leaning towards the over? I think this is what's so important. Once you look at your list, Brady, and you can add this as well, Steve, once you look at that list, you circle 3 or 4 teams you like. Grab this information and then go back and see if you can support it with data.
I agree with you completely, Michael. Now, I will say that there are probably half of the teams that are going to be sort of similar to last year. You got to find these spots where there is something that points, wow, this team could improve quite a bit because they did this. This team's going to drop next year because of some of the things they did last year. And I would say that maybe half of the teams fit into systems like that, and finding them and taking advantage of the numbers posted is the way to do that.
Steve, in your article, I wonder if you found a spot where the Las Vegas Raiders fit into a particular system. Their season win total is 7.5. And we know for the past couple of seasons, the Raiders have had a brutal NFL schedule involving a lot of travel, very difficult teams. Their schedule looks a little bit lighter this year. Do your systems indicate an under or overplay based on turnover differential and what have you for the Las Vegas Raiders coming up in this season?
Yeah, you know, Brady, unfortunately, I found one that I was like, oh, I'm going to be all over the Raiders on this one. that's about scoring 27 points per game or more. So now Tampa Bay fit into this one last season, and obviously they improved dramatically, went on to win the Super Bowl. So teams that have scored, there have been 11 teams that have scored 27 points per game or more in the last 20 seasons and didn't make the playoffs. Typically, those teams rebound for about a 10-win season the next year. So that would fit the Raiders here. However, when I went back and looked, their teams with an 8-8 record and a negative or worse than a negative point differential, they tend to decline. So I had an up and a down on this one, and we'll have to see how that plays out with the Raiders. The schedule could lead me to going over the total as well, though.
All right, awesome stuff. Absolutely
great stuff,
a must
Steve.
Read.
Get that guide if you want to bet the NFL. Get it, please.
Point Spread Weekly, VSiN.com/subscribe. Sign up for a 10-day free trial. Steve, always enjoy it. Great issue this week, and we'll talk to you again next week, my friend.
Will Thank do, guys.
You. All right, that is Steve Mackinnon, the editor of VSiN's online digital publication, Point Spread Weekly. We're coming back. We wrap it up. Michael Lombardi and Brady Cannon with you right here on VSiN. Welcome to Showtime with a chance to win $100 for a $1 money line wager on the Clippers or the Grizzlies in tonight's game. Just use the bonus code VSIN100 and you're on your way to betting with the king of sportsbooks. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com for details and use the promo code VSIN100 to bet one and win 100 if either team hits a three-pointer. It's a new customer offer paid in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia only. It excludes Michigan dissociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia if you have a problem. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, 800-889-9789. In Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. And the promotional offer is not available in Nevada. Wrapping up the Lombardi line here on a Wednesday, Brady Cannon and Michael Lombardi with you. We pass the baton next to the guys down at Circa. You saw that picture on Twitter from Derek Stevens.
Oh, my God. How good did that look?
79 degrees, 8 baseball games on tap for today. Oh. Stadium swim. Michael, I know where I'm going after the show.
Now, there's no doubt. Why wouldn't you go there? I mean, it looked unbelievable. The sun was shining. You can watch. Look, I got a baseball pick for you, Brady. I don't understand this line. Maybe you can explain it to me. But when I looked at the Rangers and the Angels, you know, the run line, it has started to come down. And I thought initially, like, the Angels are fourth in the majors in scoring, right? And they're hard to keep up with, and they've been, and the Rangers have been surprisingly competitive. I mean, do you realize they have multiple players who have more than one stolen base on the season? I mean, they've been truly aggressive on the bases, but I think this is really about the pitchers, and I don't think that either pitcher is going to bring their best stuff to the game tonight. So I like the run total at over 8.5. I think that when you look at this, you know, I don't know how to say his name. I think it's
Fultonevich.
I mean, he's 0-3 with an ERA over 5, and then Quintana's look worse for the Angels. He's not started more than a week, and he's had no time to iron out all the problems. So for me, I think this is an offensive smorgasbord, and I like the over at 8.5.
Mr. Baseball, when he speaks, listen, and I tell you what, Michael, I think it is pretty interesting here, and this is, you know, and Josh Applebaum would be interesting to ask about this as well. The opening line for the total here is 9.5. Okay, so that's the number that the odds makers are throwing up there. Now, the bettors have knocked it down. Now it's at 8.5. So do you want to ride the move? Or I also think there's a handicapping angle out there that, hey, let's trust the original number. You know, the odds makers are more often right than wrong. Let's trust that 9.5 that they put up there, right?
I mean, look, you got Trout, you got Otani, you got Redden. I mean, those got guys that can hit, and you got two pitchers that we're both not sure of in this lineup. So, like, when we get to the bullpens, right? You know, look, I don't think Texas is a great game. The one game over 500, it's kind of remarkable. I don't think anybody saw the Rangers being there. But the Angels are good. The Angels can hit. They're fourth in the major leagues in scoring. And I just think this lends itself to going over. So I think at 9.5, I probably was a no play. At 8.5, I'm going to go with the bet. I'm going to go with the house that builds the chandeliers that has stadium swim and see if it goes over.
Yeah, I hear you. I am on the Angels, by the way. I do like the Angels. Pretty good size favorite. And we've seen the money move that way a little bit. Opened at minus 170. Now I'm seeing some minus 175s. But I do like the Los Angeles Angels in that one. Also, I want to ask you about, you've got a big basketball game coming up in the NBA tonight. And we're not
playing
that far away from the playoffs. The Suns, the red hot Suns, and you're 76. This could be an NBA final, Michael. The 76ers and the Suns. I mean, I'd love to see it, really. That'd be some new blood in there, wouldn't it?
The Suns, you know, with the 128-127 win over Milwaukee in overtime, kind of controversial win. And, look, they beat the Sixers the last time out in Phoenix. They're looking to sweep the season series. They're 12-2 over the last – the Suns are 12-2 over the last 14 games. And one of the reasons is they've got four players who score 20 or more points. You know, Booker, Paul, they've been really good. So the Sixers played the other night like they didn't care. They just didn't care. I mean, you know, even though they were playing at home, they didn't have Ben Simmons. They didn't have Tobias Harris. Both missed a game. You know, Embiid was there. Phoenix is 6-2 against the spread in their last visits to Philadelphia. I take the Suns here. I think the Sixers, to me, unless Simmons is playing, the bench was – Shake Milton was horrible the last time out in the court when he had to play more minutes. George Hill's supposedly going to come back. Once again, I think Josh Applebaum is in Point Spread Weekly. He's put his 6 p.m. rule for the NBA, which you have to adhere to. Don't bet the NBA until you know who's playing. Don't bet the NBA till you know who's playing. You can't. I mean, these are exhibition games. I think Will Hill – wasn't a game last night that got to 70 in the first quarter between two teams?
Yeah, Will
it's
Hill.
It's been ridiculous.
He was on the program on Tuesday, and I said, you know, the Pelicans and the Nets, isn't that an automatic overbet? The thing flew over the total. And the same thing with Minnesota and Sacramento. And now Minnesota and Sacramento are playing back-to-back. Now, I don't necessarily think about betting the over just because it went over last night, but more about these teams. They're bringing up the rear. I mean, the absolute rear. I believe Minnesota is dead last in the Western Conference. They don't have much to play for. Do you think they're going to play any defense, Michael?
I don't think so. I mean, I tried to watch the Warriors. Look, I'm a Sixer fan. I love them. And I tried to watch the game the other night on Monday against the Warriors, and I marveled. And I marveled at Steph Curry. I mean, he was remarkable. His energy, his hard work, the way he creates his own shot, the way he gets his teammates involved, and the way he works on the court. But to me, he was the only reason why you wanted to watch the game. It was, to me, a really bad exhibition game. There wasn't a lot of energy. There wasn't a lot of real feel. It's like we're going through the motions until we get to the playoffs. And I think it really hurts the product. I mean, the product of the NBA hasn't been very good. And for us as a betting network, it's very hard to handicap when you can't predict emotion, when you can't predict, A, who's going to play, and, B, what the emotion is of the players. And we've seen it with the ratings. I think people are really kind of fed up with who's playing, who's not playing. They've made a mockery of it. They really have. And I'm saying, look, if a guy's hurt, he shouldn't play. I'm all for that. And I'm saying, look, if you don't like back-to-backs and you don't want to play in back-to-backs, fine. Then don't schedule back-to-backs as an NBA. But I think the commissioner has a lot of work to do to get this NBA back to the popularity that it's perceived to be, but it's really not there in the ratings. I mean, look at the ratings. ABC's down 45% than they were 2 years ago. I mean, you have to go back to 2011 to have ratings this low.
Yeah, probably has something to do with the fact that LeBron's been injured for a month or whatever it is, too. But, no, I think you make a great point there. And Gil Alexander, famously, has taken advantage of the tankapalooza. When you can identify teams that have just, you know, mailed it in and bet against those teams.
But that's even hard. That's even hard to do. Like sometimes I can't. Like I was thinking, okay, Oklahoma City, we'll take advantage of them.
Yeah.
And you can pick your places with them. But then there's sometimes the other team's doing a tankapalooza to outdo the tankapalooza. I mean, it's like you got
well,
two of them.
It's starting to get built into the line too. The odds makers, they pay attention too on occasion. Let's get to the NFL draft. We talked
Who do you
about
like in that one? Who do you like in that one? I mean, Phil, what would you play? Do you have any plays tonight in the NBA?
I played the over in Minnesota-Sacramento. I just think those teams are going to run up and down.
239, you don't think it's going to be
And it's gone up a little bit. It's now at 239.5. The Suns and the Sixers, I'm going to sit back and watch. I've really enjoyed And, Michael, you talk about not knowing who in the lineup, who's going to be in the lineup and whatever. I think the Sixers are a really good basketball team. But when you eliminate one of their stars, in this case, lately, Simmons, I think they become very different. They're not good when they're not at full strength.
They're not. And their bench is only good against certain level of comp, so you've got to be really careful how to handicap that. Tonight, what do the Brooklyn Nets do? Did you see the James Harden? I mean, now Harden, as much as we were pushing him for MVP of the league, the news today that Harden's not probably going to be back until at least the playoffs, that he suffered a significant setback with his hamstring. You know, now how does that affect the Brooklyn Nets? I don't know how it affects the Rat Pack next, because maybe Kyrie, maybe Kevin. We know it's not going to be Harden. So, and then, you know, the Toronto Raptors, you know, they're a 4-point favorite. Can you believe this? A 4-point favorite against the Nets. That
pretty
looks
crazy.
Ridiculous.
Pretty
right?
Crazy.
You would jump all over that line, right?
I tell you what, Michael, you know, with the Harden news that you mentioned, it seems like it's becoming a greater and greater likelihood that this team is not going to be able to all of a sudden flip the switch in the playoffs when they're back together again. I mean, they have not had any reps together, hardly any, and now it's going to be a longer time that they're not on the same floor together.
I think the better question is, what happens if they get nicked in the playoffs? Are they going to miss games? Are they going to take time off? Are they going to fight through the Knicks?
Yeah, we'll
I mean,
about
serious.
That, right?
Like,
no, you're
like
right.
I mean, the other night they played. I mean, they were playing the Heat, and Durant hurt his thigh. I don't know how bad it was, but that was the last we've seen of him.
Got a
Charlie horse.
You ever had a Charlie horse before?
Yeah, I mean,
you came
I thought
back
you
and played the next day,
out.
Didn't you?
Of course. I mean, look, I mean, I don't know. Michael Jordan, I would love to ask Michael Jordan how he views this, because his perspective would be the best. Not from me. I didn't play in the NBA. But when he watches his team, his Hornets, and the lack of back-to-backs, when he did it all the time on 82 nights, they never took a night off. I mean, that's when the NBA – Bird never took a night. I mean, that's what made the NBA – Magic. That, you know, we need some of that back. I mean, that's when it was must-see television.
Well, you talk about Steph Curry, and I have been lucky enough to grow up from the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper as a Warriors fan. And it got real good for me in the last 6-7 years. But Curry, you talk about bringing it every night. He is an absolute joy to watch, and what a tear he is on right now. We got to get out of here, Michael. I just want to ask you real quick. We talked a lot of NFL draft this morning, and it was great stuff. Is there one bet that might be your favorite as far as, you know, a sure thing? Obviously, nothing's a sure thing. The one that maybe you feel the most strongly about of the prop bets we talked about this morning.
Well, I think I really feel strongly that Justin Fields over 4.5. I feel strongly about that. I feel strongly about Kyle Pitts under the 5.5. And I'm building up. In own my mind, I'm thinking that Sewell will be the fifth pick overall. So under that, those would be the three right there. You know, I think that I can't predict. You know, I do think it's Mac Jones at San Francisco at 90% certainty, 10% with Lance. But I think those were the three that jump out to me the most.
I really hope you're right about Sewell going fifth for Joe Burrow's sake.
I do, for Joe Burrow's sake too.
Because I want to watch
Joe Burrow's. Joe Burrow's mama's hoping it too.
All right, my friend. We'll talk to you next week. You enjoy
you,
the
Brady.
Rest of your day.
Appreciate you.
All right, you bet. That is Michael Lombardi. Next up, it's Michael Palm and Amal Shah from Circa for the Nuts right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.